There's a big story in LA now. The assistant district attorney, Dana Tran, just got indicted. Can you tell us the behind-the-scenes story?
They literally came over the weekend under cover of darkness with external hard drives and started downloading thousands and thousands of personnel files and investigations. All of that is illegal.
What was she doing with the data?
She withheld exculpatory information on investigations. A classic example is when two deputies were fired about an inmate who claimed that he was assaulted by two deputies. They conclude, oh, it happened. It looks like it happened. He has the injuries, all this, except for one important detail. When it happened, the deputies weren't even working. And that information that it was their day off was kept out of the investigation. She destroyed hundreds of deputies' careers. In fact, they used to call her the badge collector.
My guest today is Alex Villanueva, former sheriff of Los Angeles County. There has been an unprecedented indictment in Los Angeles District Attorney Office by the Attorney General of California. Alex is here to tell us what's behind this and how it will impact Los Angeles.
The effect of that was catastrophic to the organization. People started leaving in droves. No one wanted to be a deputy sheriff, and they started shrinking. They're in panic mode now. They're doing bad hiring, which is mind-boggling. Because what's going to happen is in 2 or 3 years, you're going to see a bunch of cases of corruptions and dirty cops.
Why do you think this is a very odd investigation?
What Dana Turan did is just another piece of the iceberg. There's a whole conglomerate of actors.
I'm Siamak Korami. Welcome to California Insider. Alex, it's great to have you on back. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Siamak.
There's a big story in LA now. The assistant district attorney, Dana Tran, just got indicted by the attorney general of the state. And she's accused of taking personal files of the sheriff department, the deputies, and actually using them illegally in the DA's office. You have been involved behind the scenes with all of this. Can you tell us the behind the scenes story?
Well, about a month after I took office, this is at the end of 2018, almost by accident, we discovered there was a big data breach of our personnel files. And the data breach began in June of 2018, about literally almost a day after I got past the primary against the then sheriff, Jim McDonald. Dana Turan was a constitutional policing advisor for Jim McDonald, not as an attorney, as a consultant. But between her and the inspector general for the county, the two of them were working in tandem with three other individuals, and we have all the email chains, and we uncovered all this information, and they pulled not just one, two, but 23 different employees right up to the weekend before I was sworn in. They literally came over the weekend under cover of darkness with external hard drives and started downloading thousands and thousands of personnel files and investigations. All of that is illegal. There is a way to get files legally when you have a lawful purpose for it, but you have to do it in writing with the permission of the sheriff at the time. They didn't do any of that. And we have communications that showed that they knew that what they were doing was illegal. And then when I took over, I had no need for Dana Turan. So I dismissed her, but the county hired her to the inspector general's office. So she just jumped off and moved one office over, and she was still with access to those resources. She kept them, which is a crime. And then fast forward to 2021, she's working for the DA's office, and she uses these files. And she's running the Justice System Integrity Division, which is like the ethics component of the DA's office. They're supposed to hold cops accountable if they're doing any crimes under color of authority, Brady issues. All of these things run out of that office. And also when there's officer-involved shootings, they have to decide on the legality of the shooting. That's the job of the JSID, which she was in charge of. So by her using these stolen files, she committed several crimes. And those are the crimes that the attorney general is charging her for. But the important thing in this whole thing is that when we discovered this, we initiated an investigation. We alerted the attorney general.
How did you find out? How did you?
we had a data expert who was going, we were trying to pull data about the previous administration, about use of force in the jails, and about administrative investigations, internal investigations. We want to know just a total number of cases and all this to understand where all the money was being spent, because they had a $101 million deficit. So while we were going through trying to pull all this data is when we uncovered the downloading of files. And it was just shocking, because that was the very first one. Tim Murakami, who was going to be my undersheriff, he was number two. And then Carl Mendoyan, one of the deputies who was fired by McDonald's administration, he was one of the ones downloaded, all the personnel files downloaded. So this was serious. So we notified the Attorney General, notified the FBI. We initiated the investigation. The AG said, no, you can go ahead and do your investigation. Because for us, investigating someone from the department or outside the department, we do it all the time on criminal matters and administrative matters. We have an entire bureau dedicated to that, Internal Criminal Investigations Bureau. And we alerted the Board of Supervisors, because now we have potential of felony actions by the Inspector General and his employee, who was Diana Turan. We put it in writing to the Board of Supervisors, and they just ignored us. Said, no, we're not going to do anything. We have full confidence in them. So what they were telegraphing was that we don't care who you are, you're just a sheriff, so we're going to ignore you. And we, when we finished the investigation, we gave it to Attorney General. They worked on it longer, and now here you have the filing of the first set of charges. My guess is there's going to be more, because there's a lot more cases involving the Attorney General with county government.
And can you explain to those of our audience members that may not understand what's the impact of all of this? So what was she doing with the data and how did it work?
Well, here's a good example is Carl Mendoyan. See this here? The second individual, that's Carl Mendoyan. He was there on stage when I was sworn in. And that's Vivian pinning my badge on. That's my son, JJ. And you see the screaming headline, Alex Villanueva, sheriff, defends reinstating deputy fired over abuse allegations. Well, that was in a case that was investigated by the McDonald administration. And Diana Turan had a key role as the advisor to McDonald. She oversaw the imposition of discipline. And she became so influential that division chiefs, who were supposed to be the decision makers, were deferring to her about what, whether to fire somebody or suspend somebody. Because she'd say, well, I don't think the sheriff is going to agree with that. So they changed their decision to accommodate how she was playing the game. And then in his case in particular, they hid an exculpatory witness who said it never happened, and she spoke with the alleged victim. And that she was interviewed by internal affairs investigators, and that was concealed to Carl Mendoyan and to his attorney. So the Civil Service Commission never heard this information. They had a video that made all the rounds. You kept playing the video, but the video was edited for dramatic impact.
And so what was he accused of?
He was accused of assaulting his girlfriend and stalking her. And then they played the video and said, look, he's trying to break into his ex-girlfriend's apartment. That's how they sold it, the press sold it, the Times in particular. In reality, he'd been living with her. And they had a fight. She locked him out of the apartment. He had to go to work, and his backpack was in her apartment where he was staying. But fast forward 9 months later, now their ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend, she claims that he assaulted her. And oh, by the way, look at him trying to break into my apartment. What she didn't know is that you put the videos on a timeline and there's data behind the videos. And 95% of all the video evidence was removed and only 5% retained to make it look like he was breaking into her apartment when that wasn't the case. And she never called the police, said, hey, there's someone trying to break in an apartment. Nothing, because obviously it didn't happen. And this information was concealed to the Civil Service Commission, and Diana Turan orchestrated that.
She knew about it.
Yes.
She knew about this evidence that she hid.
So she presented two cases. She told the investigator, well, write up one case where we terminate him, write up another one where we suspend him. And then when she took it to the division chiefs for their determination, she took out the suspension one, they only saw the termination one. That's how that she played the game. And there's plenty of cases now, lots of cases, where she withheld exculpatory information on investigations. A classic example is when two deputies were fired about an inmate who claimed that he was assaulted by two deputies. That was his claim. He made a complaint. So it was investigated by internal affairs, I think by internal criminal. And they conclude, oh, it happened. It looks like it happened. He has the injuries, all this, except for one important detail. When it happened, the deputies weren't even working. It was their day off. So deputies say, we weren't here. It was our day off. Well, we don't believe you. We believe the inmate, so you're fired.
Wow.
And that information that it was their day off was kept out of the investigation. The fact is the inmate got beat up by other inmates. But there's little advantage to sue if another inmate beats you up. The advantage is claiming deputies beat you up. So many cases where important information did not make it to the investigation, was not reflected in the results. And the Civil Service Commission, well, they're just ruling on whatever they get in front of them. They don't know. And she was the one who was orchestrating all this, Diana Turan. She destroyed hundreds of deputies' careers. In fact, they used to call her the badge collector because so many cases she destroyed. And I'll give you context. When I was sheriff for 4 years, I terminated 165 deputies. Every investigation, I was the final person who signed off on the terminations only. I didn't get involved with suspensions, just the terminations. So I review everything, make sure we get it all right. Because there's people that do need to be terminated. It's going to happen. They do something that's grossly incompetent, that harms people. They engage in criminal conduct, things like that, where they cannot be trusted anymore. Those are the ones typically get terminated. And it happens. Any large organization, it's going to happen frequently. And we did that 165 times. Well, McDonald, 4 years before, he authorized 400 terminations, more than twice what I did in the same amount of time, 4 years. It's the same department, the same people, the same policies. So how did he have more than twice as many terminations? Diana Turan. I don't know if you want to call it, it's just not a needle in a haystack, it's the tip of the iceberg. Because now all these people who can claim they were wrongfully terminated now have a recourse to say she hid exculpatory information. Or there'd be a case of he said, she said. Well, you're a deputy, you lie. I believe the other party, so that means you lied. So, lie during the course of investigation, fire him. And there was no evidence one way or another. Those cases are supposed to be inconclusive when you don't have a way to determine beyond reasonable doubt. They convert it into founded for lying during the course of investigation, automatic firing. And they did that again and again. But the effect of that was catastrophic to the organization. People started leaving in droves. No one wanted to be a deputy sheriff, and they started shrinking. In fact, when I took over in December of 18, they were down to 9,200 sworn. So then the board challenges me on my rehiring Mandoyan. Remember, I explained to them in person and in writing, hey, this is what happened. And they said, well, they didn't tell me anything. What turns out is a week before I had the conversation with them, they had already hired a law firm to sue me. My first month
for
on
reinstating
the,
these people? Okay.
But imagine this, my first month on the job and the Board of Supervisors takes the extraordinary step of suing me, my first month on the job.
Did they tell you?
I talked to them. I gave them all the information. I said, no, this is a wrongful termination. We need to correct it. I initiated something called a truth and reconciliation process where we were going to revisit all these terminations where people claim they were wrongfully terminated and see if the claim was legitimate or not. What did the board do? They voted to order me not to do anything, not to engage in any more reviewing of files. And they sued me about Mandoyan. Now, fast forward to 2024, a bunch of deputies are going to sue now because they were harmed prior to 2018, and the board blocked them from having a chance to have their, you know, their shot at justice. I mean, some terminations were good. They were legitimate.
But there's a lot of other ones.
A lot of other ones are not, that where she was putting her finger on the scale. And that's what the truth and reconciliation process was for. They tried to paint it that I said, the discipline is too harsh. And no. There was an issue about different guidelines for discipline. There was a legal battle between the unions and the former sheriff. And I abided by the court's ruling. But I never made a mention about what was harsh or not. But the point is, the prior sheriff had changed the guidelines. So every single policy violation, the discipline standard was written reprimand to discharge. Everything was to termination, where it might have been 10 days off, 15 days off. They changed so many things to everything was a termination case. And that was part of where they were really ruining the department, because now you have your employees walking on eggshells. They're not recruiting anymore. And you could tell by the numbers. All of a sudden, the classes started shrinking. People started leaving. The attrition was higher than the retention. So that's how, in that environment, is when I ran for sheriff and ended up winning.
Folks, you've probably been hearing me talk about VyRefi for a while now. VyRefi has been getting a ton of phone calls from you, and I thank you for supporting an investment that actually helps people. A lot of people are talking about this investment, and I'd like to review the basics with you. First off, yes, it's true. You can earn up to 10.25% fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or to the Fed. You can turn your income on or off, compounded, whatever you choose, and there are absolutely no fees. There are no restrictions on your principal if you ever need your money back, and you'll get your monthly statement with no surprises. If you are not sure if you can trust this economy, this secure collateralized portfolio may be a very good option for you. Just go to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refi.com. Folks, I take my endorsements very seriously. If you're looking for a solid investment that helps people, contact my friends at VyRefi and then tell them Siamak Karami sent you. Now let's go back to the interview.
And is there other examples for our audience to understand this better? Do you have any other
Here's
examples?
Here's one.
Yeah.
And this happened on McDonald's watch, but it kind of bled into my administration. There was a shooting, I think it was October of 2018, in East LA in Salazar Park. And the shootout where bad guys, gangsters, shot up some deputies. Two deputies got hit. Another deputy, I can't remember what the nature was, but he ended up chasing one of the bad guys through the park with a radio car. And he opens the car door and ends up hitting the bad guy. The bad guy goes flying, doesn't get hurt really. And they end up arresting him. And there was a civilian volunteer in the radio car who was shot at and just hiding under the dashboard, afraid to come out because of all the bullets that were flying. So the DA reopens the case. Lacey said there's no deputy's use of force was okay. It was acceptable. The DA reopens the case and wants to fire or charge the two deputies for lying on their report, the quality of the report. So the Times runs with it. They never mention, by the way, this happened in the middle of a shootout with bad guys.
Wow.
They totally separated that from the shootout where the two deputies got shot. Once people realize the context, it's like...
Makes sense. There's a shooting and this is...
Yeah. Yeah, extraordinary measures. And if the deputies didn't document it properly, well, that's the supervision issue of, who people who turned in the report, there's ways to address it properly. And, but they went with, let's fire them. And then the Times always obliges and they went along with it. And so they totally divorced that case from the shootout that happened, that deputies got shot. A scary one. And there's so many cases like that. So now let's go to another one of these. I ended up bringing back six. See, reinstates a second deputy fired for misconduct. To put this in context, my predecessor, McDonald, rehired 14 people who had already been fired. They were going through civil service, and he rehires 14 of them. Never made the news, never a ruffle from anybody because nobody cared. Including one where there was three cases of domestic violence where there was three different victims and looked credible victims with injuries. Rehires them. I never would have hired any of the 14, much less that one. never made the paper. So now you're seeing a double standard emerging here. Why? Because I was not part of the establishment. So I don't get the protection of the establishment and the very careful, you know, coverage of the LA Times. Now, go to the next one. This is going to show four more. So we ended up doing six total. And three of them were by orders of the Civil Service Commission.
Once you showed the evidence to them, they changed their mind? Or was it?
Well, no. When the Civil Service Commission says they won their case, I'm obligated to follow their direction. One case, the statute of limitations had expired. I could not impose discipline on someone whose statute of limitations, it was blown by the previous administration. I'm stuck with the result. Another case, the fifth case, was they applied the wrong standard to the discipline and they ended up terminating a guy who was actually a suspension. And it was a McDonnell Air executive that we retained. He said, you know what? We got that one wrong. That wasn't a termination. We need to bring him back. So we in good faith said, okay, we'll bring him back. No problem. And he got a suspension instead. And the Mandoyan was a six. So those are the six. They were all legitimate. And this is what you got. So the Times and the Board of Supervisors was trying to paint the image that I was rogue and out of control. Oh, my God. Heaven forbid, you know, everybody head for the hills. There's a scary sheriff, you know, who's out there pillaging the countryside when I was actually following the law, following the evidence, and correcting past mistakes. And that was literally my job. The board couldn't have that because they wanted a sheriff who would look the other way when required, who wouldn't ask the questions, who wouldn't hold people criminally accountable when they were involved in criminal activity. Look at Inspector General. He has an obstruction of justice charge. It's serious and factual. We alerted the Board of Supervisors. They refused to touch it. Yet any employee of the Sheriff's Department, if you're a suspect in a felony case by the Attorney General, or by the DA, it doesn't have to be the Attorney General, by the DA, you're automatically relieved of duty. You don't get to do your job while there's still a shadow of suspicion hanging over your head or a cloud. You can't. You can't be trusted with doing your job. Because what it turns out that is true and you're convicted, well, now we allowed a felon to engage in something that could have harmed the public or the department. Common sense. Not only common sense, the department policy. I told the board, we need an interim inspector general until this matter is resolved. They just laughed at me and ignored it.
So their assumption is that these people are correct and you're wrong.
And I'm crazy and they're correct. Now, go from 2019, go to another one.
And the idea was that because these were the police, they're...
So see, the city chief watchdog, that is an inspector general. He writes his big report. But in his big report he writes, he doesn't mention...
All the reasons behind this.
All the reasons behind. Does not mention the fact they concealed an exculpatory witness and they withheld it from the Civil Service Commission. Does not mention the editing of the video. Does not mention so many things that were wrong in the case that he knew, but his job was just to cast, basically to cast doubt on my integrity. Let's brand him politically as being somehow unethical, corrupt, incompetent. In fact, the LA Times in one of those articles referred to me as the bumbling new sheriff, inexperienced. Well, here's the thing. There is no pathway or mechanism to right so many massive wrongful terminations. There is no set way to do it. So I reverted to what I know, truth and reconciliation process. Let's figure out one by one. Some are going to be legitimate terminations and you don't get your job back. Other ones are, no, you got screwed. You did something wrong, but not a termination. So you should get a lesser discipline, a suspension or something, a written reprimand, whatever the case is. They interrupted that.
And what's the impact of all of this, Alex, for LA? What does this tell you?
Well, right now you have a massive staffing crisis on the Sheriff's Department. You have a big one in the LAPD as well. Because remember, the politics used to be, let's just beat up on law enforcement because they're the bad guy and we'll look good for a run for re-election. That's how a lot of people get re-elected in L.A. Well, at some point, you run out of cops that are willing to do that job. There's no one left. Look at, for example, all these protests going around the college campuses today. When I was in office, We got up to almost 10,000 staffing. I hired 1,100 deputies in 1 year. We set a record. So when the I call it the summer of love of 2020, you know, when the George Floyd riots and all that stuff, we had enough people to spread throughout the county and assist local law enforcement, and we prevented us from becoming like Portland or Seattle and all those other, Minneapolis, all those places that went to hell. Never happened here. We were able to prevent it because we had the personnel to do it. Now they don't have that personnel anymore. It ain't there. When the Olympics roll around, they're going to have even less people than today. And that is a sad commentary. Imagine the sheriff's department with maybe 6,500, 7,000 sworn when there's supposed to be 10,300. They have more than 30% of every patrol station. The staff are gone. They're not coming back.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the numbers?
Well, real simple. They're so hostile, openly hostile to the sheriff's department, to law enforcement. Your employees are your recruiters. If your employees are not willing to tell their own family members, their neighbors, their friends, hey, come on, join us. It's a good employer. You're done. You're not going to hire anybody. You can spend all the millions of dollars you want on consultants and campaigning, but your employees have to trust you before they're willing to recruit people to the organization.
This scandal kind of shows that this injustice, somewhat of injustice exists in this system, right?
Oh, it does. If it was criminal and we did these things criminally, oh, may the outrage will be heard around the globe. The ACLU would be screaming. There'd be people immolating themselves on the streets about the injustice going on with us wrongfully accusing people of committing crimes, concealing evidence in crimes. It is a crime to conceal evidence. It's a crime to put someone on the stand to testify falsely, knowing that they're testifying falsely. That's called subornation or perjury. Imagine we put someone on death row and we execute them. Not that that would ever happen in California, but technically death penalty still exists. But imagine the outrage if we falsely accuse someone. A couple of people have been exonerated. You know, the project that we have with ACLU has a project, and they've been finding some people who are wrongfully convicted of murder, and rightfully so, and they've been released, which is good. But for some reason, people can't find the outrage when people are wrongfully terminated, especially if they're cops. That hatred towards law enforcement in a good segment of the population is still out there, and, well, you know what? They're not willing to do the job. They should be thankful there's someone that still wants to do the job. And they're playing with fire because they don't understand when we go, the thin blue line is gone, and all that's left on the street is them and all the savages. They want to take everything they own.
Why are so many people leaving California? It wasn't long ago, people from everywhere wanted to move to the Golden State to enjoy a better life. Sadly, the standard of living has been dropping in the past decade. Are you like me and wonder why this is happening? I'm Siamak Karami, host of California Insider. In our film, Leaving California, The Untold Story, I take you on an intimate journey of love, loss, tragedy, and hope as residents face the prospect of leaving their beloved state. Everyday people like you tell their stories about why they have to move out of the state even though they don't want to. Experts and policymakers also give insights about what's happening behind the scenes. Together, we get to the root cause of this exodus. Go to leavingcalifornia.com to view the first 15 minutes of the film for free. By watching Leaving California, you can be part of the solution. Again, go to leavingcalifornia.com.
Do you think that could happen where we see things get a lot worse with safety?
Well, it's already happening. The problem is the Times and the corporate media is not covering it. The fact that the lady got stabbed in the neck on the metro and died, it got some coverage and finally got some traction where the board of directors of the MTA admitted, oh, we got a problem. I told them that 3 years ago. They ignored me. The homeless crisis spun out of control. I told them in 21, you need to do a declaration, a state of emergency on the homeless. Take it seriously. State, federal. They ignored me. Look what happened. I told them in 2019, Diana Turan did a lot of bad things, stealing files. They ignored me. Look what we're getting now. See a pattern here? I keep telling them. Now I'm telling you, there's a staffing crisis right now. It's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. The sheriff is supposed to have 8 to 10 classes a year in the academy with 85 recruits. When you have 4 classes in a year and you got 13 kids graduating in one class, wow.
It's like you're not even at 10%.
You could do that graduation in a phone booth. I mean, that's not going to cut it.
You were a sheriff, and now with this staffing crisis, what would it look like?
Well, we didn't have the staffing crisis when I was in office. We knew we were short a lot of deputies, but we knew we could hire them. And they came back in droves. The line used to wrap around the building when we had the physical testing and the written exam. And every time we put out the opening, hundreds and hundreds of people would apply for it. So we had no problem attracting people. That was very important. But being sheriff, the largest sheriff's department in the nation, was a privilege. I enjoyed the job 95% of the time. And someone asked me once, what's it like? Well, is it easy? I said, well, it's as easy as riding a bicycle. Except a couple of details. The bicycle's on fire. And you're on fire. And the fire's on fire. That's what it's like being the sheriff in LA County during my administration, because I was under the gun by the LA Times, the Board of Supervisors, the Inspector General, the Oversight Commission, all the different advocacy groups and 501c3s and nonprofits that hated law enforcement, wanted to get rid of law enforcement. Everyone was gunning for my head. But we were just doing the right thing. So we just brush it off and just keep focusing on the right thing, which is keeping the public safe and supporting the good work that our deputies did. And it worked. Morale was sky high. People were anxious. I had people when I first got sworn in that pulled their retirement papers. They said, we want to stay longer. We were going to quit, but now we have a sense of hope. And they pulled their retirement papers for when I was a sheriff, which is very nice.
From your perspective, what does it look like for average people in LA when the sheriff department has this much recruiting? Maybe we'll have like 6,000-7,000 people, as what you're saying.
Well, you should have tens of thousands of people recruiting or, you know, applying every year. Because it takes 100 people that apply, you're only going to get 2 out of 100. You lose half of them right there just on the written test. Then you lose another chunk on the physical. Then you lose another chunk on the background. So the number keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller, so you wind up with just 2. So do the math. For a class of 100 recruits, you probably had to have about 2,000 people apply. See how that works, the math?
Wow.
The math is not going to change. But we have now evidence that they're changing the standards. Now they're allowing people that are not U.S. citizens to be cops, which I think is a horrible idea. They're lowering the standards on drug use. Everyone that we denied their application, they've gone back and now they've accepted them, which is mind-boggling. Because what's going to happen is in 2 or 3 years, you're going to see a bunch of cases of corruptions and dirty cops. It happened during the Baca and Tanaka years because they were having a hard time recruiting back in 2006, 7, and 8. And they let the doors open. A lot of people got hired that shouldn't have been hired. And then come 2011, 12, 13, 14, you had all kinds of cases of excessive force, of corruption, assault on the color of authority, stealing, and all that stuff. You could trace back to bad hires when they were in panic mode. They're in panic mode now. They're doing bad hiring. And again, the taxpayer is going to pay the whole bill.
And Alex, why do you think this is a very odd investigation? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think you got a couple of things going on at the same time. One, we know that the Attorney General has ambitions for a higher office. But he has a series of cases. He has this case now that he's investigated. Now, that's the first salvo. There's 5 suspects total on the theft of the personnel records. I don't know how many were involved in the use of the data in the DA's office. Only he'll know that. That part I'm not familiar with. So he has a lot of these cases that are all county government, either elected or appointed officials involved in. And if he wants to run for a higher office, but he has all these skeletons in his closet, he's got to clean them out. He has to start doing his job. And if his motive is heart's in the right place because he's finally come to that realization, well, good. You know, I support that. If he has a selfish motive, like he doesn't want to face a hostile federal Department of Justice that may look at him for obstruction of justice, well, maybe he's feeling the heat. That might change with whoever's in the White House, you know, the next term. So there's a lot of things at play here, and it is unusual for the most part to have the same party. But there, in the past, and this is true prior to probably Hillary Clinton in 2016, the FBI, the state attorney general, they were pretty apolitical in the sense that they went after everybody, and you could never get a word out of them, and they would not get involved in political, you know, wars like that. But ever since Hillary Clinton and the FBI director, remember Comey, when 11 days before the election, they released this, under investigation about emails and all that. See that? Right there, we're starting to influence elections. And then you lose your integrity and the appearance of always being above the fray and above politics. And that's what it should be for the FBI. It should be for the Attorney General. It should be for the DA. It should be for the Sheriff's Department. And we got to start back from scratch and realize, no, when you're in any of those positions, either on the enforcement or on the prosecution side, you have to do it colorblind. Doesn't matter what party the person belongs to. You know, if they're a suspect in a crime, investigate the crime. Do your job.
How was it that it was doable back then, but now it's less like that? You know, we don't see different people from parties criticizing each other or pointing out.
Well, you know what? Ever since, you look at Obama, when he took office and the Republican Party said their goal was to make him a one-term sheriff. Remember that? Mm. And there was a lot of outrage by the Democrats for that. Well, I took office and my own party goal was to make me a one-term sheriff. So that battle where it's us versus them and we got to win and we got to defeat the other side, and if we don't, well, then society is going to collapse, civilization is going to cease to exist. That mentality, it seems to perpetuate itself. And where it was just relegated to political battles, now it's influencing decisions that are not in the traditional political sense, but now in the law enforcement sense. Who gets held accountable, who doesn't? Who gets an IRS audit and who doesn't get an IRS audit, for example? A lot of things that, you know, the government has the potential of changing. Development, who gets the contract, who doesn't get the contract?
And what's the impact of this, Alex, in your thoughts on the future of our society?
Well, you know what? At some point, we need to get back to the basics. You know, if you're in public office for the right reasons, God bless you, do the right thing, and it's a temporary job, especially in elected positions. If you want to be a career in a job, great as well in public sector. But once you're in an elected position, recognize it's a temporary job. Career elected politicians, I think, are worthless. They offer nothing but misery. Doesn't matter what party you belong to. If you've been in office, elected office for 20 years, you have nothing to offer the community whatsoever, your constituents. You're there for yourself. You cease to be about your constituents probably 10 years prior. Who are we kidding with this? I was in elected office for 4 years. I don't know if I'd do it again. I still got to think about that. But the point is, you're there for a short period of time, make the most impact. In every decision I made, I stand by those decisions, and I did them for the right reason. Every meeting we had with our top staff, we had an issue, a crisis, anything, we figured, okay, what is it? What is the right thing to do? And then, okay, how do we get that done? That was it. It wasn't, how does this make me look in the next election, is the first question. And then let's try to not do anything about it, or let's defray it, or let's blame somebody else. You know, no. Can we fix it? What's the right thing to do? Make it happen. And that's how we treated everything.
So this is a good thing for LA, right? This investigation,
yes.
This is a positive development.
It's actually a positive development. What Diana Turan did is just another piece of the iceberg. There's a whole conglomerate of actors how else do you make $24 billion disappear at the state level? You give it to people who are not accountable to anybody. Same thing happens with the county of LA. So this is a good down payment towards, let's unravel the whole thing and figure out who's responsible for what. One day, my dream would be to see the U.S. Department of Justice do a RICO investigation on the entire county government, because I think they meet the criteria for it, and let the chips fall where they may.
So, Alex, do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
Well, let's just follow this. Let's see how the press covers it, because it got some decent coverage now, but there's other events that are going to unfold as well. Like, is she going to start wanting to talk about other things? Is there going to be an offer of a plea bargain? You know, kind of like what the feds do. You know, the old saying is the first to squeal gets a deal. And let's see who that first person is that wants to start talking. But there's a lot of evidence to chew through. There's a lot of things that are in the hands of the Attorney General that we gave him that we're expecting to see action on. And let's just keep our fingers crossed that Bonta does the right thing for the right reasons and continues down this path and doesn't delay anything or sit on things, but actually moves through.
Alex Villanueva, former sheriff of Los Angeles County, it was great to have you on California Insider.
Always great to be here.
We have an exciting news for you. At California Insider, we created a new product. It's called California Insider Opinion. This is where our insiders and experts across the state are actually telling you what's going on behind the headlines. When there's a breaking news, a big issue, important issue happening in California, they're gonna come on the screen and tell you what's happening behind the scenes. And these are like 7 to 10 minutes of opinion formats where the guests are talking to the camera directly, telling you what's happening.
You're paying a tax increase of tens of thousands of dollars every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Make sure to look at the description below, because you want to sign up on our newsletter, because a lot of these opinions might be very sensitive that some people in the social media platform may not like. So we're putting them in the newsletter on our website so you can have them. These opinions will actually help you understand the political and policy landscape of California. We highly recommend you follow it.